This week on Pop of Culture, new music from a 10-piece band.
We wanted to create a good album. That's really all we were concerned with when we started. And it's kind of turned from that into just, you know, in my opinion, the best band I've ever been in.
Our latest Beautiful Thing is just in time for summer moving season.
And we'll check in with a guest who quit their job and sold their house to pursue art full time.
There's two camps. There is the, what are you doing with your life? Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
And I get the, oh my God, that is so awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wish I could do that.
That's coming up.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from you. Your sustaining membership makes local programming at IPR possible. Join us today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. Coming up on the show, we check in with an artist who's decided to pursue art full time.
But we start today with new music from a 10-piece local band.
Way to midnight, almost every night, to take a scroll down my memories page. You don't sit right, cause it ain't all right.
White Lies and the Half Truth is a new band in the Muncie area, and here to tell us all about it is Jason Cooper and Jared Case. Thank you so much for joining us in the Pop of Culture Studios.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Happy to be here.
Well, Jared, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about the band. How did it get started?
Sure.
That kind of thing.
Sure. So Jason and I have been music collaborators since we were like 13 or 14 years old. And, you know, as we've gotten older in families and life.
Yeah.
And so about a year or so ago, we got to kicking around the idea of doing a project together. So he and I started writing this album, really recording all the instrumentation ourselves too, just the two of us.
Really?
As we could kind of delve into that, it became more of a daunting task with just two people and all the musicians that we know and have had the experience of playing with over the years. Like, why are we doing this? We have horn players. We know people that'll come in and do this. And then, you know, that spawned into more and more and more people. I said we're a 10-piece group now.
Wow.
And so we're one album in now with maybe at least two more.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome.
It's already written and partially recorded. So we have some more stuff coming out as well. So that's kind of the genesis of it. It was really just two longtime music collaborator friends, and we have the time to do it now.
Jared was kind of poking me, hey, why don't we get going on something? And it just started out from just texting some stuff back and forth to, then it just kind of exploded into what it's been now. And I've not been able to stop working on it since.
That's amazing. And life happens,
it
right?
Does. Yeah.
So what was it about now that Jared, you thought, I really need to do this. I need to get back into this.
It's a couple different things. I never quit playing music. It wasn't a finite, like, I'm done today.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, life and having kids, family, career. I always still wrote, still played at home.
Yeah.
My kids are over it. They've heard me play at home forever. Like, they're completely over it. But they're at an age now. Both my kids are teenagers. My daughter's going to graduate from high school and go to college. And so the time is the big factor there.
Yeah.
And then kind of just reconnecting with some of the guys that I still, you know, except with text and stuff, but making time for one another, and they're having the time to hang out, and you get that many creative people together, it's bound to spark something.
Yeah.
And so that's, I mean, really the only genesis from it was just time. As far as the album itself, I'm a avid vinyl collector.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never put anything out on vinyl. And we talked a little bit off mic here, like, put out CDs over the years in different bands, but never had done vinyl. And so that's kind of where this even started for us. Like, wouldn't it be cool just to have a record with us on it? Like, just to have for my collection.
Yeah.
And so that really was the...
Yeah, that was the genesis.
Oh,
we just wanted to create a good album. That's really all we were concerned with when we started. And it's kind of turned from that into just, you know, in my opinion, the best band I've ever been in.
Same. I agree with that.
It does sound amazing. Did you know going into this project when you started collaborating and writing again and thinking, yeah, let's do this project, did you have that sound in mind? I mean, it is a big, full, very soulful rock sound.
Yes,
did you know that?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't go like super into influence stuff, but I'm a huge Steely Dan fan.
Mm-hmm.
Jason is as well. Not just the music, the production side of it.
Yeah.
So we definitely approached it like, it's silly to say, but like, hey, we want to make our Asia. Like we want to make the production quality.
Yeah.
And we recorded it all ourselves as well, which I think is worth mentioning. So it's 100% produced by us. And so that was kind of the other side of it is, hey, we want to make a really good quality sounding album.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, he and I were the primary songwriters. But we definitely have more a collaborative spirit with our bandmates as well. Like, hey, why don't we try this? And so there, you know, you have 10 people. And so there's a lot of eclectic stuff moving through about it. I would say we set out to make a soul R&B record originally. Mm-hmm. It's kind of transformed into maybe a little bit something more than that. Maybe more Chicago, the band Chicago.
I can
kind
hear
of
that.
Blood, sweat,
absolutely.
And tears.
Absolutely.
Rock based with the soul mm-hmm. and blues. But mm-hmm. I think that was the intention.
Yeah, it's kind of the songs just kind of decided for themselves. And that's and I think having 10 people also kind of speaks to how important this is to us, because, I mean, keeping a band with four guys together for even a year, playing once a week is next to impossible. And then, you know, the fact that we've pulled this off just even as far as we've gotten now is amazing. And I think we still have a lot of potential to go further with it.
Yeah.
I think this next record, you know, we get everything done with it. I think I might even be more happy with it than the first one.
Wow. Yeah. Speaking of the sound, let's talk a little bit about the album, The Ghosts We Carry. Talk about The Ghosts We Carry. Why that title and what does it mean to you as you were putting it together? Did that come first? Did it come after you laid it all out?
The title came afterwards. Mm-hmm. Again, like I kind of mentioned before, as we've started recording, we've already recorded several songs in what will possibly be the second and third album. These are the songs that we thought best fit together for this one, and kind of listening to it and going through the lyrics of it. It's multifaceted as far as The Ghost We Carry is where it came from. I'm a 44-year-old man. I haven't mm-hmm. played live. I haven't done all this stuff for years. The version of me that people know that played music 20 years ago.
Yeah.
The physical version of that's gone. But I still carry it. I still carry that with me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And whether that be, you know, Love Lost.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In some of the songs.
Or, I felt that. Or, I felt that in listening to the album. Yeah.
Or Morning of Death, whatever, yes. You know, you're talking about more serious subject matter. Those are pieces that you carry with you mm-hmm. Forever. So, I mean, I hate describing art or explaining art. So take the title what you will, but that's where it came with for me.
Yeah.
Is the versions of yourself and the ghosts that you carry throughout your entire life.
Absolutely. Yeah. What about White Lies and the Half-Truth? How did that name come about?
Oh, that was just I think that was mostly Jared, I believe.
And I don't know. Yeah. I wish I had a good answer for you. We didn't want to be Jared Case and the somethings.
Yeah,
we didn't want to be that. I've always wanted to be in a band with a color in the name because
nice.
I just think it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like your Pink Floyds and you know, whatever. So I always thought that was cool, and so was kicking around ideas and actually came up with the Half-Truth first. And I was kind of maybe calling that the horn section. I was calling them the Half-Truth.
Oh, nice.
And then I don't know where White Lies came from. It's one of those things that just came. I don't have a real good explanation for it.
So. Yeah. Well, I know you now have a full album and you're playing out. Where can people get more information and kind of follow you and figure out where you're playing and what you're doing next?
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music. Our Facebook page is just White Lies and the Half-Truth. If you just Google that, it should bring up most things.
Same thing for Instagram. All of our social medias is White Lies and the Half-Truth on all streaming platforms. Not a huge digital presence online, but our albums are available on there. We're on YouTube, all that stuff. We post pretty regularly on social media as far as pictures and video and little stuff like that. Live-wise, we're kind of keeping it to a minimum as far as what we're going to play live. So there may be 2 to 3 shows for the rest of this calendar year.
Yeah, so make sure you're paying attention.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent in not overwhelming a market with playing too much.
Mm-hmm.
Or overwhelming a stage, because there's not a whole lot of venues in Muncie that can actually hold 10.
There are 10. Did we mention there are 10 members of this band? Yeah,
a little bit more moving parts as far as that goes. So we do have a couple of shows coming up here throughout the year. And maybe one more to come before the end of the year. So yeah, our social media has all that information on there.
Awesome. Look forward to seeing you out live. Thank you so much, Jared and Jason, for coming into the Pop of Culture Studios. Looking forward to seeing what's next.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks very much. You know they all seem the same. I could be miles away. And you will always be home.
The new album from White Lies and the Half Truth came out in May. It's called The Ghosts We Carry. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Jen Blackmer. Beautiful Things is a weekly online magazine of short nonfiction essays. In our ongoing series, we have the essay's author read their piece in full, and then we unpack what we just heard. Today's essay is particularly relevant if you're moving kids to their own place this month. We're pleased to welcome writer Jill Curry to the program. Hello, Jill.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. And Jill is going to share her beautiful thing with us. He comes back for the curtains.
He comes back for the curtains. After the excavation of greasy burger wrappers and weepy paper cups, after my crusted dishes are repatriated, left to soak until some other, more convenient time, after the layered heaps of lost gym shorts and a decade of too small soccer uniforms are hugged into black garbage bags, after the last day when my 19-year-old son and his friends-turned housemates pitch the remaining odds and ends into boxes, picking the bones of his childhood clean. After all that, he comes back for the curtains. The blackout curtains that helped him sleep in on so many school days, past the alarms I begged him to set, past all my fruitless shouting, past noon. I say he might as well take the rod, too. And he looked surprised, as if it never occurred to him to wonder what was holding them up. Looking past them now, through the window, he asks, "Did you know?" And I brace myself for a story about one of the times he snuck out. But instead, he tells me that senior year, his friends used to park down the street on test days, creep through the gate into my backyard to tap on this window above his bed. If he didn't wake up, they would reach a hand through to ruffle his hair. He tells me this as he casually reaches up, drill in one hand, removing each screw with merciless efficiency, a friend at each end to catch the rod as it falls.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you so much. That is just lovely. And it hits me really hard as a parent of three, I'll say adults. One of them is 17, so not quite adult. But yeah, this moment is very, very real.
Yes.
And I'm assuming this comes from a moment in your life that this was occurring.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My son moved out last fall into a house with some friends.
Yeah. And it seems like a simple thing. It really does. Like we're going to go live with friends and, you know, no big deal. But there's this moment where it just all gets packed up and it just all looks, I don't know, maybe looks small, right? I love the imagery you use about being two small soccer uniforms hugged into black garbage bags, right? A life in these containers becomes kind of profound.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. To me, I think about kind of these layers. You know, we look at our young adult children and we don't just see who they are now. We see these layers of who everyone they've been, right, up to that moment. So that's sort of what I was thinking about as I was thinking about literally excavating this messy teenager's room.
Right. Yes. And it's funny because we have conversations all the time, my kids and I, about that. You know, when I look at my kids, I see the toddlers and the elementary school kids and the, you know, the ones jumping in the leaves and all of these things that perhaps they remember. But for them, it's, you know, what they remember is the experience, not that imagery of what we saw, right? And we still see those moments in them today.
Yeah. And I think there's this kind of essential tension between kind of parents and young adult children. I mean, I remember as a young adult just wanting them to just see me for who I am now, not as a child, right?
Yeah.
And now as a parent, I see the beauty in that. You know, I of course, we want to just see them as adults and treat them as adults, but there's also a real beauty and tenderness to being able to see the child parts too.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing about this piece that really does strike me is the fact that the son in the piece, your son here, has a support system, has friends, and this image of him taking down the rod of this blackout curtain and there's a friend at each end to catch it is so amazing because it says so much in just this one moment, this one action, right?
Yeah, thanks. He and his friends are incredible. Really, they're 20 now and they're all working full time and they're so much more mature and responsible than I was at that age.
Isn't that interesting? I see the same thing in my own kids, right? This sense of an understanding that I just feel like I didn't have when I was that old.
Right. But also they have each other's backs in a way that I just think is remarkable.
Yeah.
And it gives me a lot of comfort.
Yeah, which is awesome. And so have you shown this piece to your son?
I have, yes.
Yeah, and what was his thought?
He's not a big talker. he didn't say a lot. He said he was going to show it to his girlfriend.
Oh, well, now that probably says more than if we might think on the surface. That's lovely. Right. and the other thing, too, and this is, I think, connected to what I know of your work, particularly as a parent, it's very easy to feel like you're in this all by yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And this is just your situation. This is your problem that you're struggling with. And then when you pick up a piece by someone as eloquent as you are and as beautiful as a writer as you are, right, where these images that are so familiar really, I think, strike us in a visceral way, right? We're not alone.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing about this short piece is I was having trouble writing about this scene because not because I didn't have feelings about it, but because it didn't seem very interesting to me. You know, I'm sad and I'm happy and I'm proud, but, you know, everyone feels those things. But when I approached it from the very specific details, it sort of unlocked something for me. And I have been pleased that it seems to resonate with other people, too, who've gone through a similar experience.
Yeah, it really does. The details, I think, especially. And you talked earlier about tension, right? And this living in this space of you're sad, but you're happy, but you're proud, but you're nervous, but you're, you know, all of these things that seem as though they're contradictory, right? They can exist. They can coexist. And these are the moments where they do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. As a mother, we want to give our child every single thing. We would, you know, we would give them the shirt off our back, as they
absolutely,
say.
Absolutely, yes.
And then they walk out the door with all of those things and they go on and have their life. And there's this part of you that's like, wait a minute.
Yes.
Exactly what I wanted you to do. And how dare you?
Yes, exactly. That's beautiful. That's beautifully said. This is, I had you to put you out in the world and let you go, but you're not allowed to do that.
Right.
Oh, Jill, what a pleasure it's been to talk with you about your beautiful thing and about your work.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Jill Curry is a poet turned nonfiction writer. She lives in the Pacific Northwest, where she's working on a memoir about neurodivergence and intergenerational trauma. Her son lives nearby and is doing just fine on his own. This story comes from IPR's collaboration with River Teeth's Beautiful Things, a weekly magazine of micro essays. More at riverteethjournal.com. We have a follow-up today on one of our favorite guests, Amy Maychek.
When we first spoke to Amy, they were making art as a side thing.
And only probably in the past like 4 years have I really been taking a stab at being more involved with my art. And really, actually, since December, I've been like, okay, yeah, I'm going to really see if I can make this hustle happen as an artist. Kind of a continual process.
That was in 2024. And now, Amy, I would say local artist, but Amy is moving on, doing a lot of different things. Amy, welcome back to Pop of Culture.
Thank you. It's so good to be back.
Well, when last we spoke, you were doing a lot of art right here in Muncie, living and working in Muncie, doing a lot of things at Tribune Showprint. Now you are on the move. So tell the people what you've been up to.
Yeah, I decided to take a big leap and see if I could pursue my art career full time. So I sold my house, packed up my life, and I've hit the road doing internships and residencies, hopefully around the country. Currently, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee at Hatch Showprint.
Nice. So talk a little bit about, I know you've only been there a few days now, but tell us what it's like at Hatch. What were your first thoughts coming from kind of the Tribune Showprint world?
So Hatch Showprint is the second oldest continuously operating print shop in the United States, wow, where Tribune is the first.
Yep.
Hatch is connected to the Country Music Hall of Fame, and it is also kind of the place where various acts come to get their venue posters printed. So anybody from Dolly Parton, I'm looking
what?
At an old poster, Bill Monroe. I just disassembled a poster for Cyndi Lauper.
What?
So all kinds of big acts come and request Hatch to design posters for their various tours and shows around the country.
Wow, that's huge. So talk about your internship. As I said, you just started. How long is the internship and what kinds of things will you be doing?
So the internship is 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And during that time, like the past couple of days, we've been learning the shop, learning the history. And then from there, as an intern, there's four of us. So I'm one of three. I'm the eldest with everyone else in college. And eventually we'll be completing orders for clients, designing the poster from beginning to end, printing the various layers, and yeah, with the guidance and assistance of the people that work here at Hatch.
Wow. And so after this 6 weeks, where do you already have something else lined up, your next internship?
Sort of. I will be coming back to Muncie.
Hey!
I actually have a couple things scheduled in Muncie. And Tribune is my home print shop, so
yeah,
I'll be back there printing. I'm teaching a class at Minatrista in October, where we'll be
nice.
Learning lino cut carving. I'm currently working on another internship up in Minnesota,
mm-hmm,
outside of Minneapolis with another printer. And I have a residency in April up in Vermont. That'll be a month-long residency.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got a lot going on, but I'm glad you're going to be back here. And I, you know what, Amy, I kind of buried the lead, but while you are doing your internship in Nashville, I mean, you're featured in an exhibit. I mean, yeah, no big, No big whoop. Just, you know, yeah, got yeah, down no, there, one no of the big, big artists. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually currently, since we spoke, and I was going to move my studio from my spare bedroom into my living room. And since then, I've really kind of poured a lot of effort and work into expanding my career, which includes a lot of applying for residencies, internships, art shows. And with that, you know, there's a lot of rejection, but you just got to keep plugging away.
Yes.
Because eventually something will hit. But I'm currently in a show called Reform, which is at the Elephant Gallery in North Nashville.
Wow. Talk about the pieces that you have with the one at Elephant.
One of them is a reduction. And the piece was designed, I got inspired at a restaurant watching people engage in a conversation. I put down my phone and started people watching.
Yeah.
And they were talking with their hands. And you could see, even though I couldn't hear them, you could see how engaged they were. And I love this idea of how we're all connected and communicate with our hands and with our bodies. So I took that idea and then had a conversation with myself about that idea on camera, and then separated a lot of those images out, and then drew out the hands, and ended up printing kind of this motion, in motion conversation that I was having with my hands about the piece. And the piece is a reduction, which means that I start out with the linoleum, drew out my piece, and then carved it, and then printed one color, then carved away more, and then printed another color. So then you're kind of destroying the piece as you print.
Wow.
But you get this beautiful multiple layers of colors within the one piece, one work.
Wow. So how long does that take for one piece when you're having to carve away each?
It's not necessarily. I mean, there's a thought process that has to happen. Color selection is very important because you don't want the colors to be muddied.
Right.
Because you're essentially printing another color on top of one color to get bonus colors. So doing some test color printing to see how it's going to lay is important. But it really, for that piece, it's the carving. That is a 16 by 20 or somewhere around there, a piece of linoleum that I carved. So that took quite a while. I mean, that's shameless plug. It's on my website. It's called Join the Conversation.
Oh, nice.
And you can see each individual like line to create the shadow and the hands.
Okay.
And that's probably what took the longest.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, are these hands part of the series that was involved with the exhibit at Gordy Fine Art and Framing as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
The one I'm talking about, though, is a little bit different. It was it's a color piece. The one that was there was just the black and white.
Yes. Okay.
And then the second piece, it's a self-portrait of my hands cupped in front of my chest, which is something that I do to ground myself almost every morning. And I'm kind of looking down, and it's called Guarded, just in the idea of the current climate that we're in and that so many people in the LGBTQ community have to guard themselves. And that was the inspiration behind that.
Wow. So what's next? Any movement or, you know, are you thinking about your next kind of series?
I'm kind of letting myself relax a little bit. I'm keeping in the process of creating. I've been doing some gouache and watercolors while I'm here in the Airbnb that I'm in, just to kind of keep my drawing skills up, and also to kind of commemorate this time, and then planning on sending those postcards to people. And
I love that.
Doodling, and I think really learning so much here at this internship. I think when to start looking for new work is when I come back to Tribune and really start cranking out those presses, because already my gears are turning
on
some things that I like to do.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to take, you're learning so much, it's going to take a minute to process, right?
Yeah.
So what else do you have going on that we can talk about that,
well,
you have coming up?
I think probably the biggest thing is, and the thing that has been the most interesting, I think, that people want to hear about as mm-hmm. well when I talk to them, is the fact that I'm 48, going on 49 this August, yeah. and I just decided that, yeah, after 24 years in fire and EMS,
yeah.
that I need to do something different. And I think for most people, that is a very odd thing to do. The mm-hmm. responses that I've gotten from people are really quite different. There's two camps. Mm. There is the, what are you doing with your life? Why wow. are you doing that?
Yeah.
And I get the, oh my God, that is so awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
And it is terrifying at times, but at the same time, it's been very freeing of like, we only live once and yeah. I only have this one opportunity
right.
to make my life whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you know that it was this time? Because I'm sure we all kind of get tinges of that or feel that. How did you know this is it? This is the time. If I'm going to do it, it's now.
Yeah, I think quite honestly, it has a lot to do with the coming into my own as a non-binary person, coming into my own in that realm of life, having the confidence as an older person of like, hey, my artwork's actually pretty good. And I think I might try to do something with this.
Yeah.
And also, honestly, the politics of the current situation of what's going on and feeling like I'm just ready for a change and I'm going to take this chance now, even though there's so much transition in the world, like I'm going to make my own transition. And this is something that I can do for myself and manage and control.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I know you're only a few weeks in, but do you already feel, was it worth it?
Oh, yeah. I feel a lot lighter. And I've, again, I've been doing fire EMS for 24 years. It's a fantastic job, but I was ready for something different. Mm-hmm. It takes a toll on first responders. So getting rid of that like level of stress and also, yeah, just really diving into what I want to be doing. I've had friends comment that, oh, my God, you look so much happier like already, which is, yeah, I think is very telling.
Oh, and I'm sure you've probably been asked by friends and I'm sure there are a lot of people listening that would want to know, but what advice would you give them if they're kind of thinking the same thing? And maybe it's not art, maybe it's something else, but I think it could apply across the board. What would you tell someone who's interested in taking a leap?
I think it's a matter of trusting yourself that you will have your own back. And honestly, I couldn't do it also without my community. I've got friends in Muncie. I've got friends in New York. I'm staying with a friend here at an Airbnb and having those networks and relying on your community a bit, but also knowing that like you can have your own back. I took bartending classes before I took the leap. I know I can always fall back on being a paramedic. I planned, I saved. So I was a little retentive about my process, but I think just trusting yourself.
Absolutely. Well, Amy, thank you so much for taking the time to revisit Pop of Culture. And we look forward to your visit back to Muncie this fall.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
Amy Maychak is an artist currently residing in Nashville.
Every week, we ask another artist, what are you working on? This week, our co-host, Kara Duquette, brings us a young artisan she met on the road.
My name is Riley McDermott, and I am from Monroe County in Illinois, which is just about 40 minutes away from St. Louis. And it's pretty much a very rural community that also has that urban side since we are so close to the city.
Hello, Riley. Thanks for talking with us today. I met Riley McDermott at a farmer's market this summer, and we enjoyed talking with each other.
Yes.
And, yeah, it was so much fun.
And yeah. You know, Kara came up to me at the farmer's market, and she was looking at my products. And then when she introduced herself and this opportunity, I was a little surprised. But, you know, it's really shown me like how far my business has taken me and how far of a reach I've had. So it's a pretty cool opportunity that I have here.
Yes. And I'm so happy that you're here to speak with us. Can you tell us specifically what you do?
Yeah. So being from Monroe County, I've been connected to agriculture my entire life. You know, I've grown up on a farm and I've always been excited to be in FFA. Ooh. And it's just really my personality really is FFA and agriculture. And it's kind of funny to say that. But yeah, really in 2021, I started my business Tilt the Table, where I was just selling produce off a road for about 5 hours. I would reach maybe 10 customers. And then in 2022, I actually expanded to become a part of the Monroe County Farmers Market, which reaches almost 100 customers a day. And it really has helped me expand my business into something much further than I ever thought I would even reach. So I really just am excited to see how much further I can take this and how many doors it has opened for me already.
Well, and how old were you when you started this business?
I was 15 when I started selling stuff, but you know, I've been in the garden and helping my grandma with canning ever since I could walk. So it really has been in my family for a very long time.
Wow. So how many family recipes do you utilize when you can?
I would say there's about 6 or 7 recipes that have been passed down throughout my entire family. And the thing is, whenever you are selling processed goods, you do have to apply to the food handler certification and the Cottage Food Act license. And you have to follow those regulations to make sure that what you are producing falls within those food safety guidelines and is safe for you to sell to customers. So I actually got kind of lucky. I guess my, you know, great grandparents kind of knew what they were doing, because my recipes actually did fall underneath those guidelines. And I was extremely excited to be able to share those recipes that so many of my friends and family have loved for years to even more people within my community. But there are definitely some recipes like carrot cake jam that I just, you know, found on Pinterest one day and thought I would try it, and has turned out to be a big hit for my business.
Wonderful. And you told us there's some things that you have to abide by in terms of quality of your product. And so what are some of those things in the cultivation of your vegetables and in the processing that you must do? You said some of the recipes followed those guidelines. So can you walk us through maybe one of them?
Yeah, sure. So I would say the biggest guidelines that you have to follow apply to whenever you are making tomato-based products like tomato soup or salsa. And that is because tomatoes are a very acidic vegetable. And so they have to follow the pH guidelines. So if your recipe falls under 4.6 pH, then you are good to go, because it is acidic enough that bacteria won't grow. And so there's definitely a lot of science behind this. You know, it's not just baking and cooking. You know, that's what cooking and baking is science. And so I think it's also really cool. And that's why I do plan on going into crop sciences when I go up to the University of Urbana-Champaign in the fall. I'm pretty excited to major in that. But there's so many different aspects that come alongside of it that definitely start in the soil. You know, I start my production around January or February, planting the seeds inside and helping them grow, transferring them into the garden around April and May, harvesting them around July and August, and then processing those vegetables as they come in as well. And so really just making sure my production stays local, follow those guidelines, and stays legal and safe for my customers is my top priority.
Well, you do a wonderful job. I just opened some pickled green tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday that you made, and they were fabulous.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've actually sold out of those, so.
And I want to know what you've learned or how you've changed through this whole process.
Yeah, well, definitely. I used to be extremely shy. And as a freshman, I participated in the FFA Creed, which is basically you memorize the creed in FFA. It's 5 paragraphs long. And it basically talks about the morals and values that come with FFA. You memorize it, answer some questions about it, and it really helps freshmen get into a career or pathway of public speaking and building their confidence. And I definitely think that's where my level of confidence started. And starting this business, having to talk to hundreds of people every week, has really helped me break out of my shell, become who I am today, and really opened so many doors for me in the future. I've met so many people. I'm really close with the national FFA president, Thaddeus Bergschneider. He and I are really good friends as well. And so really this business has brought so much more than just a little bit of money. It's brought me opportunities of a lifetime.
That's wonderful. Connections. And it feels like you did a lot more than memorize the creed.
Yes, I definitely did.
What will you do with the business once you go off to college?
Well, a big part of the business does happen during the summertime, so I will be home for that. But during the preparation months of the winter, my family will kind of have to step it up a little bit. So I'm hoping that they will be able to help me with that. And hopefully I can continue my business throughout my college days. But I definitely do want to see Till the Table continue, as it is something I built from scratch and is something I am extremely proud of.
Wonderful. Can you tell everybody where they could see what Till the Table Homegrown Veggies is doing online?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I post everything that I'm doing on Facebook under Riley's Till the Table. And I post any new products that I come out with, just really what I've been doing in the garden, and that I make an announcement of when I'll be at the Monroe County Farmers Market.
Riley, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And you have done some amazing things, and it continues.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
And yeah, I mean, this is what I do. You know, I love to talk about my business, how I'm connected to agriculture. And it is also something that I'm looking for in my future career, is being able to advocate for agriculture and those who put in the work throughout the industry.
That's wonderful. That's needed. So we're glad you're out there advocating. It's time for the arts calendar.
My favorite time.
And it's a hot one.
Michelle, it's going to be hot this weekend.
Ooh, is it?
Of course, I am talking about Fire Up Downtown, a sizzling street fest, Saturday, August 2nd in downtown Muncie. The event from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. will include hot air balloons, hot live music, hot activities for the family, lots of great hot food, and tasty beverages, hot and not. Makers Market and more. DowntownMuncie.org has the hot details.
So let me get this straight. It's going to be hot?
Yeah, I think so.
Gotcha. All right. So Much Art, the 2025 Juried Art Show, continues through September at the Arts Place Blackford County Arts Center in Hartford City. The awards reception will be 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, August 1st at the center.
Revisiting Credence, toured the world with the original Creedence Clearwater Revival members and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame legends. Now they're continuing that legacy live in concert. Catch the band Saturday, August 2nd at Paramount Theater Center in Anderson. AndersonParamount.org has ticket info.
The Indiana State Fair kicks off Friday, August 1st at the fairgrounds in Indianapolis. Concerts, exhibits, fair food rides, and so much more through August 17th. IndianaStateFair.com has the details.
It can't be fair time already. It's fair time. Oh my gosh.
It is. And have you seen the fair food list?
Oh, I have.
Oh my
it's
goodness.
Off the charts.
Yes.
Okay. Gen Con.
What? My a festival con. All about you?
Oh, I wish, but no. Gen Con, the best 4 days in gaming, is on through Sunday, August 3rd at the Indiana Convention Center in Indy. Check out the latest in the tabletop games. Meet the nerdy writers. It's my favorite part.
That's a good thing.
It is. Enjoy live entertainment and more. And the people watching? The best. GenCon.com has details.
The Van Buren Popcorn Festival is popping through August 9th. I couldn't resist. I had to do it.
You shouldn't resist.
There will be a parade, car show, 5K run, free entertainment, and, well, popcorn.
Now, really?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Looking ahead, next Thursday is First Thursday, my favorite Thursday mm-hmm. in downtown Muncie. Check out exhibits, browse downtown shops, enjoy live music, and shop the makers booths from 5 to 8 p.m.
Hey, send us your artsy event stuff. IndianaPublicRadio.org/contact, then click Pop of Culture.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from you. Your sustaining membership makes local programming at IPR possible. Join us today at IndianaPublicRadio.org.
And that's our show. Our fact checker and shadow producer is Stephanie Weekman. And our producer is Luke Jones, who just started his own band, Brutal Honesty and Total Truth.
Especially when he's giving us feedback.
Exactly. Our show was hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey.
And me, Jen Blackmer. Pop of Culture is a production from the entire Gentle team at IPR on the campus of Ball State University. And I'm Jen Blackmer, Pop of Culture and the Ghosts We Carry. After this, from IPR. We'll be back from IPR.
Mm-hmm.
One more time. Third time's a charm. What? What?
He just kept adding words and words and more words at the end. Which it was totally fine when you did it. It really was. That was hilarious.